Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me on today's episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. As always, thanks for being with me. I know you've got other things that you could be doing. You're taking time to out of your busy day to watch and learn a little bit, hopefully, from what we have to say. I appreciate it. So today's guest is a good friend of mine. He's got a really interesting story. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. Dr. Kevin Estes. Hey, Kevin, welcome to I Don't Care.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Kevin. It's good to be here.
It's always good to see you, my friend. Hey, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you've got such a storied career inside of medicine and outside, but let's start with your medical career. Tell my audience a little bit about your specialty, you know, and why you chose that. Yeah, because I don't think a lot of people really know what a physical medicine and rehabilitation doctor actually does.
Yeah, you know, your audience is not alone, even if they're physicians. Quite a few of my colleagues, they know we exist and have a good idea what we do, but not fully. One of the reasons that's a problem is that my field is broad. It covers a lot. And that's, frankly, one of the reasons I chose it, because it's quite a lot of variety. So physical medicine and rehab, I tell people we run the hospital after the hospital. We're physical rehab hospital physicians. And so where we spend a lot of our time or the type of patients we have in that hospital, strokes, people with spinal cord injuries, people who have a lot of other problems, maybe age is one of those, and they have to have a knee or a hip surgery. Not quite ready to go home. They need to get a little stronger. And frankly, what we see a lot is they're not quite sure home is an option. And that's where we're really spending our time trying to help folks get stronger, bigger, better, faster, stronger, as I like to tell them. And so we help coordinate the care through all facets. Certainly physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, we work closely with them. Closely with internal medicine doctors. And I think with probably if you need a one sentence way to sum it all up is we will ask residents wanting to join our ranks, nephrologists work on kidneys, pulmonologists work on lungs. We don't have a dedicated organ. So what in the world are we doing? And the answer is function.
Okay.
What do you need to function in your life, whatever your life was before the event that brought you to us? How can we help you get back to that level of function as closely as possible? Sometimes we can get there, and sometimes we're close. And of course, unfortunately, we have a lot of cases, strokes or traumatic brain injury. And that traumatic brain injury medicine is rehab medicine is what I did my fellowship in. Those folks, sometimes we don't get close, but we help them find a meaningful life. And what do you need? Everything from a walker to a van that will help you drive to making sure there's family around or friends or family. So that, I'm sorry to say, the nutshell is a pretty big nut there, but that in a nutshell is what we do.
Yeah. Well, you and I, we've had a lot of fun together and working together in this area. I've got a soft spot for rehab in my heart because that's where I started in my healthcare career 37 years ago.
Yeah.
And on the business development side, and it was a lot of fun because nobody like what you're saying, nobody really knew what physical medicine rehabilitation docs did, it was commonly known as physiatry back then. And so whenever I was going out talking to potential referral sources and mentioned physiatry, and they're like, oh, psychiatry. I know. No.
Or podiatry, you work on feet.
Right? Yeah, right. But it was such a new discipline. I know that physical medicine rehab came out of after World War II.
Right.
It was because of many soldiers coming back with missing limbs or, you know, TBI, traumatic brain injury or whatever. And there was, as you said, nobody there to help coordinate their care. And so didn't the discipline start like 46, 47?
Yeah, it started that early and became officially, I believe in 1958, it was adopted as a discipline,
okay.
56, 58, something like that. So in the grand scheme, it's certainly a lot newer than internal medicine. It's quite in its infancy. And so I understand why my colleagues don't fully understand it. The other part that's a little confusing to maybe some of your viewers is that's just the hospital side. Then there's the outpatient part. And some of the outpatient piece that we do is following up on patients who need just a little check-in, you know, maybe 3 months after they're in the hospital. But a lot of what I see in my private clinic, low back pain, upper back pain. And, that's, sort of bread and butter. Now, we'll get into a little bit later. There's all other kinds of problems that especially my musician colleagues can encounter. And so neuromusculoskeletal problems, as we age, like I like to say, God only made fine wine and cheese to get better with age. The rest of us are going to need a little help along the way.
Well, very true. Well, and as you were saying, you work in a lot of different venues of care. You can work in the hospital. You can work in a rehabilitation hospital, a skilled nursing facility, an outpatient clinic, or whatever.
A lot of my colleagues actually work in dedicated orthopedic clinics because we play very nicely with orthopedics. Well, most of us do, I think. And our role there is to help you stay out of surgery until you need surgery. And then after you have the surgery, a few weeks after you are fully healed or healed, we help you get stronger again.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned a little bit too, I think physical medicine rehab is also a little unique because of the breadth of the multidisciplinary team that you work with.
Right.
Yeah, you know, listed all the, PT, OT, speech and all of those folks. But it even goes beyond that because, as you said, you're trying to coordinate that care. So you're bringing in prosthetists or orthotic folks, home health, everybody, and really trying to make sure that patient gets the full breadth of post-acute care that they need.
Right, and case managers, social workers are so key to all that. And you know what? We should just stop right now, and I should apologize to my wife, who is a certified rehab nurse, that nursing is one of those big key pieces that we didn't talk about.
Yeah, it really is because, they are helping that patient, during the day when they're not in a therapy discipline or whatever, they're actually helping them utilize what they've learned during that day, right?
Well, absolutely. And some of our patients are less stable. They can they can do the work, but they need some nurturing. That 24 hours a day, beautiful angel of mercy nursing, and keeping eyes on them, letting us know what happens overnight, and we can make some medication adjustments. So one of the reasons I like physical medicine and rehab, it truly is a team mindset. It has to be successful.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a little bit about your outpatient clinic, but I know you do a lot of locum tenens work or temporary fill-in doctor work for those who don't speak Latin. Talk a little bit about that, kind of your choice behind that and the benefits and some of the pitfalls to that for you.
Wow, yeah. So I was thinking I would tell your audience that locum tenens was, Latin for something roughly translated to are you free? Do you have time to help us out? We don't have anybody. I think where it might have started, though, to explain it a little better, is there are a lot of folks who do it for vacation coverage for docs who I've done that before in a hospital where there's only one PM&R doc. You go for a few weeks and help out. I think that morphed into, wow, that's a pretty nice model. Maybe we can bring somebody in for 6 months, frankly, see if we like each other and move on from there. So we see a lot of contracts come across like that, 6 months or a year. And then there are models like what's going on here, which is we need some people to fill in some weeks and have a small core team of people who can help. And frankly, those of us who have private clinics or some of my colleagues who want to work half time, able to do it. So as far as, you asked for what are the benefits, the pitfalls, that sort of thing. I would say some of the benefits are getting to see different hospital systems, how different groups do their day, how they organize, and how they succeed. And of course, we know that sometimes our best education comes from seeing what doesn't work and how we recover from it. So there's a lot of variability. And of course, meeting some really nice people. And not to mention getting to visit some really spectacular places. I'm sitting here. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, exactly right. I mean, you can't. It's tough to get bored, you know, whenever you're doing locums work, because you are seeing so many new, different things in the settings wherever you are. But you were talking about you get to see great parts of the country.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially now that nursing has had what's called a compact license now for quite a few years, in where the member states, you can have reciprocity between. It's a little bit different with a medical license with the physicians. They're making it easier to get a license in the state where you want to go. And previously, you know, that could be a multi-week at best and multi-month typical. So it's making it possible. If you want to go, there's a job that just came up. I guess I don't want to get too specific here for anybody, but in the Northwest of the United States, in a beautiful part of the country, if you wanted to go up there. And of course, there are ones that are popping up all the time.
Interesting. Okay. So let's transition into the next section that I want to cover with you. You were in a totally different field, totally different industry before you went to medical school. Tell my audience about that and about, you know, kind of your decision on why you decided to go to medical school at a little bit later age in life and all that.
All right. Well, okay. So I was in my early 40s when I started medical school. And yeah, I usually tell people it's going to take most of dinner for me to go through the story. But
you got time. Go ahead.
Time. All right. Where shall I start with this?
Where I grew up.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was about to say. I grew up about an hour and a half north of here in Arlington, Texas. And I was born in Fort Worth. Went to a great school there in Fort Worth that I think you might have heard of. Purple School. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
And so went to TCU and had an opportunity to go up to New York and study music. And so I did that, and that was good. And
okay. Tell people, where did you, Kevin, just tell me where you studied, because people are going to know that.
Well, in addition to TCU, I earned a master's degree in music from the Juilliard School in New York.
Yeah. 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 That carries a little weight with most people. So was your undergrad in music as well?
No, I was in sciences.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I was always interested in science. And then the opportunity came to go up to New York and study Juilliard. And I thought, well, I'll go give that a try. And honestly, what I ended up doing was they had a 1 year master's certificate. So the programs there, they have traditional bachelor's, master's, and doctorate degrees, certainly in music, not so much in dance and drama. That's a sort of different situation. But they also have these interesting programs, certificate programs, that are less academically heavy. And so they're, instead of 4 years, 2 years, and then however many years to get a doctorate, it's minus one. And it started sort of focused on private lessons and learning a little bit about spending more time learning how to interpret music as opposed to more academic. And of course, you know, an undergraduate degree needs a certain number of things to be more broadly based. I went up there for the 1 year master's degree, the 1 year master's certificate, ended up staying and getting the full degree. And truly a life-changing experience. And for me, I was fortunate that it didn't stop there. I had good contacts from conducting professors and composition professors. And I ended up, I probably should count this up sometime, probably 4 or 5 years after I graduated, I continued with private lessons, both in orchestral conducting and composition. And that was, spent a lot of my time in New York as a church musician, almost exclusively doing church work. And as a matter of fact, I was the music director for the First Baptist Church of New York City on the Upper West Side. And I started, unwittingly, started 6 months before 9/11.
Wow. And talk a little bit about that. I can't imagine what that would have been like.
Looking back on it, it was surreal. And it was surreal for weeks. It has a special place in my heart, not so much from a good perspective, but in a, wow, look what we all endured together. In that particular church's case, it got the church doors open 16 hours a day. We were able to find ways to, of course, being New York City, you have to be careful of just opening doors. You have to make sure there's somebody to make sure everything goes well. And that raised a lot of awareness of our presence there. We church 13 blocks north of Lincoln Center on 79th and Broadway, right on the 19 line. Very nice location. And so I don't even know that I've told you this privately. One of the most memorable pieces of that is a little moribund, but put life into perspective. So, help you see kind of where we all stand. As you may know, they used the big postal 18-wheelers, U.S. Postal Service 18-wheelers. They would drive down, they'd go downtown on Broadway down to Ground Zero. And they were empty. You could hear them clanging along across all the bumps, empty when they would go down. And when they'd be on the far side of Broadway coming back up, they weren't making any noise like that. And it just gave a little perspective and meaning to life. And frankly, once the shock wore off, gave some sense of gratitude. It was a special time. It's a special place in my heart. Not only that time, but what we did there. I often joke, I told somebody this recently, the great thing about being at 79th and Broadway was you can throw a rock and bounce it off five people who can sight read perfectly walking down the sidewalk. The level of musical talent there was amazing. And so we did a lot of great works with orchestra and my choir there, and a lot of major, not to make a list or anything, but a lot of major works. One of the other things that I did that was kind of interesting was before 9/11, a few months right before, I went down to Juilliard. I'd graduated, 4 years before. And I knew the lady who was the lawyer there. And I walked into her office, made her appointment. I said, I just started this church here, 13 blocks uptown. And just kind of curious if there's any way we can sort of partner. Would love to do whatever. And she looked at me, goes, "Are you kidding me?" I thought, well, what have I done? She said, "We are about to start our Juilliard, this is March, we are starting our Juilliard jazz program. We had chosen the first class, and we have a place to practice." And so I said, "Well, let's see what we can do." Sure enough, so for 4 or 5 years, they practiced at my church. We had two very nice rooms. And the way it was set up, I lived up in Connecticut at the time. So I was at church Wednesdays and Sundays. And so I'd hear them on Wednesday. Truly remarkable, especially in the fall each year, to hear them start in the beginning of September. And then by the end of October, you're like, it's amazing, the transformation.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So, okay. So you're a highly successful church musician and all that. What caused you to go to medical school in your early 40s?
Wow. Well, I tell people this is something easier to tell one-on-one than to unknown. Yeah. You're just going to listen sure. to it. I tell people that if you promise not to think of me as arrogant, because I abhor arrogance, I had a nice musical career. And in my late 30s, I had already been able to do quite a fair amount that I enjoyed. And I still do have a church job, and I still enjoy it very much. And as my wife was pregnant with our first son, it crossed my mind, do I want to do this same thing for the next 40 years, 30, 40 years? And the answer is yes, but... And so I went and talked to a counselor I'd gone to previously. I said, all right, I got this idea. For starters, my wife's pregnant. And I'm thinking about leaving my good job while she's pregnant and going to medical school. And I said, try to talk me out of it. So we talked for a few months off and on. And finally he looked at me and said, I think you're doing it for the right reason. I said, thank you so much. I think I am too. It took me a while to get there. Because I figured, oh, I'm trying to do this or this or that. And I realized, no. And sure enough, along the way, I'll be honest with you, being in your early 40s, going back to medical school with two kids, very supportive wife. It's hard. It was a challenge. Yeah, multiple levels. And people would ask me along the way, is it worth it? And I said, absolutely. There was never a time that I thought I've made a big mistake. Mm-hmm. It was time I thought, what am I doing?
Yeah,
I would say with clarity, at least 99% of the time, I always knew this was the right thing. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I love what I do. I love being able to, frankly, bring a sense of ministry into the patient.
Yeah, we've talked before about the synergies between, you know, music in medicine, but you chose a discipline that needs that level of creativity, because it is so, you know, at times it's very, you know, it's very vague. And so you're having to create the plan, you're having to implement the plan post-acute environment.
Yeah, you know, and there are a lot of dichotomous keys out there that help us know what to do in medicine. And sometimes you've never been down this path before with these particular parameters. This family member has this opinion and that family member here, and the patient's a hoarder, and you know, so realize it's and that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms, but the creativity piece is exciting to me, and sometimes the stumbling block for the whole process. So I would say the creativity, and you know what else is the at least I enjoy, and this was always fun. This was fun for me. I like this story from medical school. So the beginning of second year at my medical school, we started with neurology, and then pretty quickly, or after that, it segued very easily into psychiatry. I love psychiatry. I gave it a consideration.
I could see that knowing and, Yeah.
I like it. I decided I didn't want to only do that, but all medicine involves some psychology, and a fair amount of it includes a lot of psychiatry. Well, time in medical school, we've come out of cut and dry. Here's the disease. Here's what happens. Here's the answer. It's letter C or it's letter B. And we had a particular lecture where PhD and an MD were up there lecturing and talking about a particular problem in the psychiatric world. And one of the funnier young ladies in our class who sat down on the front row finally had enough. And she was like, just what is the answer? I just don't understand. What is the answer? They looked at each other and they kind of laughed and they said, well, should we tell her? And the other said, I suppose. And they looked at her and in unison said, we don't know. The point being that in the world of psychiatry sometimes, but in these situations where you have a patient that comes in with a stroke and you know you're going to have them 14 to 17 days, we don't know what's going to happen in 14 to 17 days. We have a list of things we expect, but the ability to be flexible and to work with whatever, you know, happens in the meanwhile, it, like you say, being creative and being comfortable. And this is where I think music and frankly age has helped me. There are many good ways to interpret a musical passage. There are many good, valuable ways. We might not all agree that these five choices are all for me. I can take one and four personally. The other three, they're fine, but not me. Same concept applies in medicine. There's, like I started with, there are dichotomous keys all over the place that help us know what to do, but sometimes you just have to look at the situation and be uncomfortable being uncomfortable.
You know, something just kind of came to me, and I'm sure you thought of this. You know, your conducting background, I mean, that's what you do as a PM&R doc. You're conducting your orchestra, your care team, and as you were just saying, you know, you're interpreting that care plan differently for every patient.
Mm-hmm. And frankly, rolling with whatever comes at you.
Sure.
Next. And without getting too deep in the weeds, which I'd be glad to in the musical realm, if you've chosen to interpret a section of music a certain way, and let's say you have these four phrases that you want to interpret in a certain way. If you interpret the first one the way you want and something just doesn't quite settle right, and I mean here in terms of with a full orchestra, not as a solo performer, if things just don't quite work right for that second phrase, it affects what it should affect how you handle phrases three and four. And you have to be adaptable with a broader understanding of the big picture. And this is one thing that I think somebody I really respected who sang in my choir just finally said that, you know, I can keep track of the minutiae while I'm considering the larger picture. And I think that's exactly what has to happen in medicine. We have to take care of pain. We have to take care of all those other daily needs that aren't working well. But our ultimate goal is to rebuild this person's life as well as we can, or help them, I should say, guide them in that direction.
Huh. Well, I got Kevin, not only have I enjoyed becoming friends with you over the last year or so, but I've loved hearing your story, and it's just so unique from really just about anybody else I've ever met. So I've been dying to have you on the podcast for a long time. I'm glad we were finally able to make this happen. Any final words for my audience?
I think one of the things where we are as a society is not understanding that flexibility we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that dogmatic approach that can often be born out of, well, this is what I experienced. Had a patient, that dogmatic approach is causing us a lot of personal and I think societal problems. I had a patient who is having some challenges. She's going to make it through it. And the husband said, well, oh, I had this same surgery, you know, 4 years ago. I know what she's going through. And I thought, you know, just sit there and smile and say, well, yes, but no. We have to learn to live in each other's shoes. And live and let each other live in their own shoes, I should say. I guess what I would end with, going back to First Baptist in New York, you know, every church I've worked at, I've learned some major lessons. The one that one of my favorite that I took from First Baptist, again, from a musical and theological perspective, is this. If you believe, and as you well know, the great Baptist tenet of the priesthood of the believer, which for your audience, it's pretty self-explanatory, but As Baptists, you know, we believe that we can read Scripture and interpret it for ourselves as we look to know God better and God's love for us better. I'm sure some better words can be applied to that, but I think that covers it. Well, what I came to realize, especially in the realm of music choice, which is always a hot-button issue in churches, in terms of musical choice, I realized if you believe in the priesthood of the believer, ultimately, by extension, a few steps down that road, I have to let you get to God in the way that makes sense to you. And I need you to let me get to God in the musical way that makes sense to me. Now, we can all agree that there are some choices that might not be as healthy, but by and large, for those people who are seeking a healthier, happier, a healthier, better understanding of God, you need to allow them to do that. And I think the same absolutely carries true through what's going on in our society. And I think one of the best words is tolerance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a good word to end on. Well, Dr. Kevin Estes, my good friend, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. I'm sure we'll be talking again very soon.
I look forward to it. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed today's discussion as much as I did, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Take care.